You are listening to KLRN Radio, where liberty and reason still reign.
Hi, I'm Mike, founder of DollarShaveClub.com. What is DollarShaveClub.com? Well, for a dollar a month, we send high-quality razors right to your door. Yeah, a dollar. Are the blades any good? No. Our blades are f***ing great. Each razor has stainless steel blades and aloe vera lubricating strip and a pivot head. It's so gentle a toddler could use it. And do you like spending $20 a month on brand name razors? 19 go to Roger Federer. I'm good at tennis.
And do you think your razor needs a vibrating handle, a flashlight, a back scratcher, and 10 blades? Your handsome ass grandfather had one blade and polio.
Looking good, pop up!
Stop paying for shave tech you don't need. And stop forgetting to buy your blades every month. Alejandro and I are going to ship them right to you. We're not just selling razors. We're also making new jobs. Alejandro, what were you doing last month?
Not working.
What are you doing now?
Working.
I'm no Vanderbilt, but this train makes hay. So stop forgetting to buy your blades every month and start deciding where you're going to stack all those dollar bills I'm saving you. We are DollarShaveClub.com, and the party is on.
If you prefer real mornings, shouldn't you have a real breakfast? At McDonald's, we get real about breakfast. That's why you can have a savory sausage biscuit with delicious hash browns for only $1.50. It's time to wake up breakfast. Single item at regular price. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal.
My son was in the Army back during Desert Storm, but even then he wanted an MBA. He looked at a dozen schools, but only one offered the online education and flexibility he needed while he was in a tent in Iraq. Grantham University. Turns out that Grantham's been delivering affordable, relevant college and advanced degrees for over 65 years. Heck, if they can deliver a quality education to a soldier in a tent overseas, think about the flexibility Grantham can offer you so you can earn your degree too. It doesn't matter how complicated or full your life is, if getting a degree is on your bucket list, you'll want to do what my son did. You'll want to call Grantham. Find out how easy it is to get started on your education so you can check that college degree off your bucket list. Call Grantham right now, 800-910-1370. That's 800-910-1370. Flexible, affordable, relevant. Call 800-910-1370.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-516-7602 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-516-7602 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-516-7602. That's 1-800-516-7602. Again, 1-800-516-7602.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, $10,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-783-0810 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-783-0810. Again, that's 800-783-0810.
The following program may contain coarse language, adult themes, and references to copious amounts of drinkings. Listener discretion is advised. That's not the right one. Hang on just a second. Technical issues. My board didn't load. Hang on. I pushed the right button. All right, there we go. Now we're ready.
Good evening, everybody. Diane is out today. She's sick. Wink, wink. I want to welcome everyone to the Red Wine Show on KLRNradio.com and say hello to our producer. And also today, since Diane is playing hooky, I was lucky enough to have a surprise guest host, Carrie McRae. She's a good friend of mine and also a former Republican State Senate candidate for Plymouth and Barnstable counties. Carrie, thank you so much for filling in for Diane. I feel like we're the cousin once removed because I was filling in for Jody and now you're filling in for Diane. So I think somehow we're related. So, sister, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me. And I'm excited about doing this too. Obviously, we have our conversations, great conversations, on our own. And so when you guys asked me about this tonight, I was excited to share our talks.
That's so great. As you know, Diane and I have been friends for 40. We went to high school together. And Carrie and I met, for any listeners that aren't familiar with Carrie or me for that matter, I was doing oppositional research for the Republican Party during Carrie's campaign. And I was not familiar really with politics at all. I had volunteered some years previous. And I met you, Carrie, and I don't know what it was. It was just kind of a chemical, friend thing, where for me it was an automatic trust. And if you don't mind that I share, we kind of made a pact with each other that, listen, if you screw up, I'm going to tell you. And if I ask you a question, you're going to give me the 100% honest truth. And that's something that you don't often get in politics. And although, we may agree on some things and not much that we've disagreed on, but I think that basic trust in communication is key.
I agree.
How do we, what's happening in the national arena with McCarthy, do we think that that's personal? We think that that's policy? And how does that affect our kind of local politics?
Well, I don't know. I mean, just hearing the last couple of days with the indecisiveness and the fighting, it kind of made me think about what we dealt with when we were running. I thought for sure that when I threw my hat in the race that I would get phone calls from some of the Republican representatives in our area, because there's quite a few of them. I mean, we're in especially in the Plymouth Barnstable district, there's quite a few Republicans that hold office, whether it's state reps or even more, local town committees and things like that. And I was very surprised that they didn't have anybody look or reach out to me and say, hey, this is great. This is what you need to know.
I wonder if that's, was that sort of favoritism, or had they not had a Republican candidate? Because you're in the Mashpee area, Mashpee-born, Plymouth, Kingston. Pembroke, if I Mashpee and Falmouth were added. So that's a very large area, and I don't know when they last had a Republican there, but they should still be behind you. I found that it was kind of a rhino thing, that the unwritten rule is the elected Republicans here, which would have been Xaros and Whalen and Tracy Post, and I would even extend that so far as to the sheriff is, well, him not so much, but they would not support a Republican candidate against a Democrat incumbent.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting when what I did hear from that. I, you know, deciding to jump into the race, I really didn't know exactly what was going on, except for I saw that things were heading in the wrong direction, at least from what I thought and from some of my family. And being an educator, seeing things trickle down into the schools, I really decided to get involved. And like I said, I didn't know about the unwritten rule until I brought in somebody to run my campaign, and she reached out to a couple of people and said, hey, you know, would you like to, you know, work with Carrie, give her some pointers, so on and so forth. And they were like, sorry, can't do that. And I remember reading the message. She sent me the message, and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. This is the reason why there's very little Republican representation in Massachusetts. I don't think it's because of the people themselves. I think it's because, you know, the Democrats historically do a much better job of supporting their own and each other. And the Republicans do a great job of supporting all of the Democrats as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Charlie Baker hasn't done much to, you know, help the party either. We've lost a lot of Republican seats since he's been the governor. Oh, my bad. I should back up a little bit and just tell everybody that you're in okay, and then you made a TikTok, which caused a little bit of hay.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I'm concerned, you just spoke your mind. And I didn't know anything about the TikTok video. I had heard you on the Ed Lambert show, and I said, oh my gosh, that woman's face is diversity. I have to get a hold of her. And, you know, to give a little background, I hope you don't mind me not getting in too deep here, but you're a breast cancer survivor.
Yep.
And I also learned that your mother had cancer as well. I'm so sorry about that, because my dad had cancer as well. He just passed, not of cancer, but
yeah.
And when we met at your house, you told me that your mother had passed, and then we were talking a little bit, and, you know, being the inquisitive kind of cop interviewer that I am, I think I raked you over the coals to know if I wanted to really throw my support behind you at the time.
Yep.
And if you don't mind, your mom wrote a couple of books, and this one's called The Eagle's Claw, and it's a great picture of the front of a kind of, you know, the, like, an antiqued flag in the background with the American eagle kind of swooping down like it's going to grab some prey.
Yeah.
And on the back, and I don't know if you remember this, but you and I were in your kitchen, and mm-hmm. we were talking, and you said your mom was an author. Of course, I asked for the book, and I was like, oh my God, after I read this. So I just want to read if everyone else is. With the country in a prolonged depression, letter carrier Josie Cotrite, I'm sorry if I'm not saying it right, is thankful to still have a job and a home. She struggles to hold on to the threads of the past and drastically changed present. Josie's mind and spirit are under constant assault by the misery of others, even though she tries to avoid their fate. Her brother, Dennis, a postal inspector and former Marine, is her closest friend and mentor. When Josie learns that her brother's underground activities fighting against the many changes that the 12 years of total government control have brought to the country, she's shaken to the core. Josie is doused by the cold, well-hidden truths about her brother and her country. She is forced to make a decision, join the fight for a return to the founder's America, or live long enough to perish as a coward. I still get goosebumps. But do you remember what I did after I read that?
Yeah, you were like, oh my gosh, this is, Carrie, read that again. I think you made me read it like 3 or 4 times. You're like,
it
look
was
at this.
Amazing.
And it really made me think about you know, my mom passing, you know, a little over a year ago now, a year and a half ago. And reading that again, it was very moving, and thinking about the reason why I decided to even jump in the race, right? Is because either we could sit there and just go along to get along, like we saw these people, like little sheep following the arrows in the grocery stores,
right?
Or we could be that person that says, this is ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
I am not going to do this. I'm going to live like a regular human being that's free. And I chose the latter. So I think that reading that and then kind of reminding myself about the book that she wrote many, many years ago, because she saw the writing on the wall, and we're living it now. And instead of being a coward and maybe living longer, I would rather have a shorter life, but a meaningful life, and fight for my children and my grandchildren, like you said, you know, to fight for our kids.
We are not going to put any limits on your, there's no expiration date on you, Carrie McRae. And I actually say your name wrong. I've always said Carrie McRae, but how do you say it? McRae.
Well, it's McRae. Yeah, McRae.
It's yes. McRae. I said so. No.
Yeah.
And that is like, seems to be something that is carried down in genes, because your mom was a fighter.
Yes.
She had you when she was young.
Yep.
And that kind of formed, you know, some of your thoughts as well as they formed mine. Mm-hmm. And I think she would be so proud of you. I really do. And I think this book just speaks volumes. I mean, if that is not screaming, you know, from her in the past, looking forward to leave you this book. I mean, I still have goosebumps. It really, really speaks to me. And, you know, I didn't have a mom like that. So you're really lucky. You know, she was creative. She was independent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and obviously I haven't had a chance to read the book yet, but sure, it's entertaining.
It was. It's interesting. You know, even just certain parts, like I pick it up every once in a while and just kind of read a few lines. And she was on point, you know, that you know, fundamentally our country is changing, and it has changed. But I don't think, you know, there's a lot of naysayers, a lot of people I hear on, you know, Ed Lambert's radio show in the morning. And there's always one or two that call in and say, oh, doesn't matter. It's over. They destroyed it. There's no going back. But the majority of people that call in, and the majority of people that pay attention and are not happy with how things are going, really believe and feel in their heart that we can take things back and make things the way they're supposed to be. So
if nothing else, I do believe that this has caused people to say, wait a minute, what is going on? And especially with, you know, the news now, the superintendent, Scott Ziegler, in Loudoun County, Virginia, was indicted.
Yep.
And he was indicted because he covered up two sexual assaults that happened under his watch, in his school.
Yep.
And being in the school committee, I'm sure you're familiar with the federal chapter 1983, which is, it was tried in Fitzgerald versus the Barnstable School Committee, which there was a girl that was on the school bus, and a boy told her, you know, to show me your underwear, and it progressed to a point where you can imagine where it went, and they were young kids. And the parent complained to the principal, and the principal said, well, drive your daughter to school then. Which, of course, is not the right response, right? Probably
no.
We've grown and we've learned since then. But I've found, as being a private investigator, being a police officer, that a lot of schools, and especially superintendents, will kind of sweep these things under the rug. This in particular was, you know, an alleged transgendered student who was in the bathroom but had sexually assaulted another student in the bathroom and then was transferred to a school under the rule. You know, kind of don't tell anybody. And it's not that I'm against anyone who is transgender. The point is that there's a theory for a crime. And there's three things that you need for a crime to happen. You need opportunity, you need absent a guardian, and you need a motivated offender. What the Democrats don't realize what they're doing is it's not, you know, it's not being a homophobe or you know, a transphobe or anything like that. Any criminal will take an opportunity that you give them. And this allowing men to use a woman's bathroom gives them opportunity, a motivated offender, and lack of a guardian, because there is no one in the bathroom watching you unless you're at a Red Sox game.
Yep. And no, so you're absolutely right.
And you and I understand this. It's not about being discriminatory. Nope. It's about not giving adult men in a dress access to girls in the bathroom. We're not saying that transgendered people are the offenders, although mm-hmm. in this case in Virginia, he was an offender.
Yep.
What we're saying is that we don't open the door to the possibility of crime.
And we definitely don't cover it up when it happens.
How abhorrent.
I mean, it's mind-boggling. And you know, we talked about this even just earlier this afternoon, and it's like, why are these people doing this? Why do people in authority and in power cover up? You know,
because they make $250,000 a year, yep. and they want to keep their job, and that
yep.
is abhorrent. There was a congressman, I'm sorry, a bishop, I think his name was waiting to be sworn in today. Of course, how anxiety ridden can you be? You're waiting to be sworn in as a congressman, right? And you're on the sixth vote. You still have nobody to swear to.
Oh my gosh. Listen,
I'm super excited to start my job. Like, what can I start? But he made a great point, and he said, listen, I'm not here for a long time. I'm here to do what I'm supposed to do. But a lot of people do not have that mentality. And these superintendents, as you know, are paid, I believe, way beyond their skill set. You know,
yeah, sometimes they are. Sometimes they are. Yep. Yep, I agree. I mean, there are definitely districts that have a lot more responsibility and many more challenges. And oftentimes, they're not the districts that are paid what they should be getting paid, right?
I agree with that.
You know, but like you say, it all comes down to, you know, the selfishness and the mentality that, you know, I'm bigger and more important than everybody else. And
well, I think this is what you and I ran up against when we ran for Senate. And if anyone isn't familiar, I'm on one side of the bridge, Carrie's on the other side of the bridge. So yeah. It would have been really nice to have two, you know, Republicans working in tandem for the best for the Cape and Islands and for Plymouth and Barnstable counties. But it's just, it's too bad, because some people think that because we speak out or speak the truth, that's somehow disrespectful. But I think we're seeing a lot of Republicans, conservative women and conservative as well, not necessarily always Republican, but kind of entering into politics because of this very reason.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, there's, like you said, there's that misconception that as soon as you make a statement or you question a certain protected class, you right off the bat, you're called a bigot, you're called homophobic, transphobic, so on and so forth, which I'll be honest with you, I never understood the whole phobic piece of it, because, you know, I don't fear. you know, I don't fear. It's your lifestyle. You're an adult, and that's the lifestyle that you choose, or it's just innate in you. And who am I to judge you? You know, the only time that I have spoken out on certain things, and look, there are people, you know, hardcore, you know, right wing conservatives who do not think that, you know, that it's a sin and people should not, you know, be married because they're gay. And hey, listen, that's your thing. That's not my position. My position
that's
on a lot
position,
of this stuff. Exactly. A lot of this stuff is, you know, we need to let kids be kids, and keep things, you know, support the children that are going through, you know, gender dysphoria issues, you know, support the kids and be there to help them. But we should not be presenting this transgenderism stuff as an option, right?
Or as a panacea for everything yeah. that's wrong in your life.
Yep. Yep. I mean, we see the suicide rate. It's still going through the roof, right? And it's because, you know, these kids, you know, are thinking this is the answer to their mental challenges and struggles. And then, they turn out to say, well, geez, I guess I wasn't. And now they're not accepted by an additional group of people, right?
Well, and even it's very hard to even be accepted. You know,
yep.
There's a difference between being tolerated and being accepted.
I agree.
And I think being accepted is a mindset. Being mm-hmm. tolerated is a politeness, a humanness,
yep.
and to some extent, a kindness. But you can't force acceptance, in my humble opinion.
Mm.
You know, you can have a group of police officers and they hang around together and you can call it the thin blue line or whatever. But there's always someone who's not accepted. They're tolerated.
Yeah.
But they're not accepted into the group. And that, when you try to change someone's thought pattern, I think that's when you, and then you back it up with legislation, you know, like Mari Healy. You know, I'm so glad she's done telling us that she plays basketball and that she's the first lesbian governor. I don't think being a lesbian makes you any more or less of a governor. And
I agree.
And I personally could care less who yep. you have your sexual activity with.
Yep.
You know, I actually think it's inappropriate to even speak about it. But that's just me, because for me, you're telling me who you have sex with. I don't care who you have
that's
sex
right.
with. But to say that she got her first, you know, of course, we're in an economic sinkhole here in Massachusetts. But the first thing she wants to tweet out is how she's met with educators and coaches in school, you know, educators, and wants to make sure that everyone is comfortable and safe and there's no hate in the locker room.
Oh, I know.
So, you know, I'm kind of worried. If that's mm-hmm. what she's worried about.
Yep.
I just, what are you seeing, if you can say? I mean, do you think, or do you feel, I feel there's a lot of teachers being pressured to kind of go along, to get along. And then there's just some nuts that they think that it's being accepting, but there's a time and a place for everything. And I honestly, I don't know what your thought is. Like, why is this even in sex ed? Why isn't it in sociology?
You know,
it's not about the sex for me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care who you have sex with. So why is it in sex ed? Why isn't it in sociology?
You know, I think one of the biggest issues for me personally and a lot of people that I talk to is it's even one thing if all of this was in the sex ed, but it's not just in the sex ed now. Now you have, you know, between your math class lessons and your English lessons and the books that, you know, the kids are reading and being assigned to read, you know, are teaching, you know, a lot of sexually explicit,
disgusting pornography,
disgusting
on how to perform fellatio.
Yeah. I mean, come on. And this is where, you know, I had a conversation with a gentleman when I was out campaigning, and he works for one of the advocate groups for gay and lesbian youth. And I think that's great. He's there to support and advocate for kids that are struggling with whether it's gender dysphoria or whatever else. And he saw my sign that said, you know, pro-parental rights or something like that, it said. And he came up to me at the grocery store because I was right out front there. And he said, you know, I've got to ask you, why do you have that sign that really bothers me, that makes me concerned? And I said, well, what sign makes you concerned? And he said, the one that you said, you're pro-parental rights.
Now, okay, it says pro-parental rights. So please tell me, what part of that is offensive?
Exactly. And he said that it was because he feels that, you know, parents don't always understand what their kids are going through. And if I think that the parents should have say in what's going on in their children's lives when it comes to their sexuality, whether it comes to their, you know, gender, you know, struggles, blah, 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 that, you know, this is the reason why we're having the, you know, a lot of things are going backwards, he said, where, you know, he's a gay man. And he said, you know, I struggled to be able to be out and safe in my skin and be comfortable being who I am. I said, well, that's really sad. And I said, and I think it's very important that you are accepted for who you are. I think it's very important that you live a happy life.
Being but some people are not going to accept that, period.
Which is fine. But my thing to him was,
everybody in life has to understand that. There's going to be some people who don't accept me. Some people don't accept you.
Yep.
But it doesn't have to necessarily be your group. You know, they just don't like Republicans, period. Okay. It has nothing to do with me personally.
Exactly. It's as soon as you say that, they're right there. Yep. And it's true. So I said to him, you know, I said, well, that's really sad. I said, because I think that the reason why you're seeing people kind of turn and not be as accepting is because now we're getting to a point where children are told that, you know, they're reading books where, you know, little kid books where it says that they can identify as a tree. And he said to me, he goes, excuse me. And I said, yeah, let me show you the book. I was at the Massachusetts Association of School Committee meetings down in the Cape the week leading up to the election. And I remember showing, I had read through the book and then I recorded going through the book, not because of the different pronoun things, they, them, z's on, whatever it is, right? But tree, T-R-E-E.
Yeah,
and
that's
so I
just,
said to him,
that's like
come
a psychological
on.
Exam. Do you feel like you're a tree? Sometimes, yeah. Often, always?
Exactly. What? Like it was mind-blowing. So I said to him, so here you are. This is what the problem is. The problem isn't that people aren't accepting that you are a gay man or that you're a lesbian woman, right? People are getting frustrated because enough isn't enough. Now, you want to teach children from kindergarten to third grade. This book was like for preschool to second grade or third grade. And they're teaching children that they can identify and use a pronoun of tree. For one, it's a noun. And I'm sorry, but you are not a tree. That's a fact.
Well,
you're
not only that, but kids don't have that kind of all-encompassing understanding of self.
That's right.
So, you know, like I remember my son, they didn't talk until they were like 20 months because they're twins. So they must have been older than that. But I specifically remember him saying, Mama, you a girl like Kai Wu, his sister. Mm-hmm. I a boy like Daddy. And that was by the age of two.
Yep.
You know, I sometimes wonder, and I wonder if some parents, it's kind of like a Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
Yep.
To me, I agree. I hear there's a show that I watched. I wish I could remember the name of it. It was about a Navy SEAL, Chris. Oh my gosh, I can't remember his last name. And he was on SEAL Team 6. And he came out as transgender, and he, you know, I'm sorry, but there's very few that feel the part, that look the part at the same time.
Yep.
So I can understand that they may feel that that's the way they're supposed to dress, but it's uncomfortable for other people, one, because it's new, mm-hmm. and they don't look like women.
Yep.
And they're not women. And they can say that they want to be a woman, but they're not really a woman. I think deep down they understand that, because is it not a parody of women?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's great as entertainment, but I don't want to have to give up who I am. Yeah. I don't want to be called a birthing person because you want to be called a woman.
Nope.
I'll call you a woman. I'll share it with you. But just don't take away my rights, and don't take away my rights to educate my child the way that I want to educate my child.
Well, and educate your child is the truth. Look, there's a very, very, very small fraction of people who struggle with gender dysphoria. So
it's like 0.0001.
Yeah, it's something crazy. So why are we introducing this and teaching this in our public schools and some of our private schools now that this is an option? That you
I'll
can
you
do
what.
This.
Look how many people were told COVID's going to kill you. I mean,
yep.
I lost a friend that I had since I was 12, and she told me there was going to be people dying in the streets. I said, you need to slow your roll, because that cloth mask that you're making it is not going to stop. And she's like, it's better than nothing. I go, it's really not better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And now look what's happening. Now we have 23-year-olds dying on the field, on the sports field. We have people that are having blood clots taken out of them that are still 3 feet long. Ugh.
Yeah.
So we know now that what they're telling us, what the government told us, was an out-and-out lie.
Yeah.
And it appears to me that this is yet another way of kind of one of, you know, I think it was like, I don't know, 10 points to destroy a country, a Saul Alinsky theory. And one of them is to get in between children and their education and their parents.
Yep.
And what a great way to do it is to convince them that they're someone that they're not, and don't tell your mom or your dad.
Yeah.
That bothers me the most is the nefarious.
I agree with you. And it's, you know, it's interesting because I remember my husband, even just a few years ago, was working at a school down the Cape, and he was in a meeting and they were, you know, kind of talking about, okay, so we're going to be doing our parent teacher conferences, and we have so-and-so's mom and dad are coming in, and you know, we,
oh, I know what you're gonna say.
Yeah,
they had, and one folder for Jane and another folder for Joe. Oh my god.
Yep. And my husband like looked at them and said, so wait a minute, I understand that, say she's Jane but she goes by John, and we all know she is Jane, but we call her John, and we, you know, she writes John on her papers and so on and so forth. He goes, the parents don't know about this. And they said, no, the parents are fighting it and are not allowing her. Now, mind you, she was, I believe, fifth or sixth grade.
So how old is that? Like 10?
That's like 11, 10 or 11, something like that. Yep. So my husband says, so wait a minute. So what do you guys do then? Like when we do our report cards and they took whatever, like the teachers would, you know, would give for a grade, and they would transpose it onto the one that had Jane's name, John's name, and send it. They had a separate file. They had all this. So my husband
said, "What gives them
the
right to do that?"
Our state legislators have given them that right.
It's
craziness. There's teachers. So needless to say, my husband wasn't asked to come back the following year, but he actually sat there and he said to them, I am not going to sit here and lie to these parents. If they say, has Jane been trying to get you guys to address her as John? He was like, so you want me to lie to them and say, not only is Jane still doing this, but we're allowing it? And
right.
we're playing this game with her?
Because what if she was a cutter? You know,
exactly.
If she was a cutter and cut herself in the bathroom, would they not tell? Or are they going to say,
what if she was bulimic?
We could,
what if she was bulimic? What if she, number of things. So, you know, my husband refused. He said, I'm not sitting in on the meeting. You can share my notes about Jane.
I liken it to this, Carrie. When I first met you, we went to a Zoom. Do you remember we went to that Zoom?
Oh, yes.
In the sandwich schools, and there was a woman there with her breast amputated, and her name had turned to Dirk Diggler, the porn star. And she told us that our children need to learn that their gender is fluid.
Yep.
And that one day you can want to be a dancer, and the next day you can want to be a mathematician. And I was thinking, in Dirk called herself an expert, but never really said what the expert part was. And they basically admitted that no one asked for this training, but that Dirk was being paid, I think, $300 to show up.
Yeah.
$500
I think it was
up, $500.
Yep.
Yeah. And then $300 for every whatever thereafter.
Yeah.
But it's abhorrent that I couldn't do that in good conscience. I couldn't keep that secret from a parent and then have a parent-teacher conference.
No. And we shouldn't. I mean, what are we teaching our children? To lie to their parents?
Right.
We're the parents. And I've gotten some arguments with some people, you know, over the last year and a half. And they're like, well, what do you do if the parents aren't accepting? I said, then you know what? Get the court involved. Do not. If you have a child that comes to a school psychologist and you know, the teachers and social workers and what be and says, I don't feel safe at home, being honest with my parents. Well, you know what, guys? We need to investigate why this kid does not feel safe at home.
And an investigative agency to do that.
That's right. We don't just take the kid's word for it and then and hide it from the parents and encourage the child to hide this. Because you know what's going to happen? We don't acknowledge to the parents that this is going on. This child is living a double life and then goes home at night. And one night you see they hang themselves. They
kill themselves at home
because in their parents' closet and they had no idea what was going on. And who's held accountable? No one. That's right.
And then the school
should be.
They're like, don't say anything.
Nope.
Like my kids go to a Catholic school here in the Cape. And they sent home this letter that said, students are, have been having a hard time after 2020. And, you know, we have a person that will come in and, you know, quote, talk to them. And it's, quote, confidential from me as the parent. And I was like, wait a second. So I sent an email. I said, and that's all it said. I said, A, who is this person? B, what are their qualifications?
Yeah.
What are the experience? And where are these kids going to meet this person? And what do you mean it's confidential? And what do you consider incidents that are reportable to DSS or the police? And what kind of training does this person have to understand what those incidents are? You know what I mean?
And the parents. Yeah. They don't include this stuff with the parents.
As soon as I said, didn't any parents ask this? And they said, the acting president, she said to me, well, other parents seem very happy with him. I'm like, okay, it's a him. Well, where are they meeting? Well, they're meeting in a safe space. Okay, not to be a fresh person, but the church was supposed to be safe in the 60s too. How did that
work? That's right.
Okay. So
60s, 70s, 80s.
Yeah. So don't tell me that the only thing that you have to tell me as an interim president of a Catholic school that I pay a lot of money for my kids to go to, that you can only identify the space as safe. No,
yeah.
I want to know, is it in the cafeteria? Is it behind a closed door?
Yeah.
Is it a male? Is it a female? And what's their experience?
Yeah.
And so that, even in the Catholic school, I was shocked. And you know what? They got mad at me. They got angry with me.
You questioned them.
Right?
Can't question them.
My friend called me and said, her daughter is a very good athlete, went to a boarding school. She called the pediatrician to make an appointment for her 13-year-old daughter. The person who answered, this was on the Cape, said, how do you know that she's ready for a physical? And my friend's like, because I'm her mom. Well, you have to have her call and schedule the appointment and get the link to the telehealth appointment. She's like, well, give me the name of the link and I'll give it to my daughter. She's at school. No, you don't have a right.
Yeah.
You don't have a right as the mom. I said to my friend, I said, well, did you tell them that you'll send the bill to your 13-year-old?
Yeah, that's right. Good luck. Good luck. And that's the thing that, you know, look, this is the issues with the liberals and the Democrats, right? They want to have their cake and eat it too. It's ridiculous. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. At 15 years old, you in Massachusetts, you can go have an abortion and your parents don't need to know. Can you imagine
I think even younger. I mean, one, I would be really, really sad. I mean, I would be thinking legal if that happened without my knowledge.
Yeah.
I would really take that really personally. But I don't think, you know, I thought that going to a Catholic school was going to be a better education or whatever. They still sweep things under the rug just as much as a public school does, but they're just more polite about it. But you know, they have a kid whose name is Summer. In the summer, she's called Summer. In the autumn, she wants to be called Autumn. In the winter, she wants to be called Winter. In the Catholic school.
Yep.
So, you know, one of my kids watched a video about George Floyd. It was my daughter, Kyle. She's 17 now. And she texted me, "Oh, my God, Mom, you're not going to believe this. Watching this video, and someone said that George Floyd is a hero." I'm like, "What?"
Yeah.
So I asked the teacher to send me the link, and I look at it, and I'm like, "Huh, this guy's name is Philip Atib Gobb. I think it's G-O-B-B. Mm-hmm. And he founded the group, the musical group, called Deep Dickelective. D-I-C-K-E-L-L-E-C-T-I-B-E. So I emailed the teacher back. I said, "Is this what the Catholic school's promoting? Listen, I don't care that the guy's gay. I care that he said that George Floyd was lynched. He was definitely killed unnecessarily.
Yeah.
But do you want Deep Dickelective in your name and this Catholic school's name to be in the same sentence?"
I know.
So even teachers, like, how do we hold them responsible for what they're exposing our kids to? Because, you know, you're an educator.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not cool, but you would be cool to my kid because you're their teacher.
Yeah.
Like, you would have influence.
That's right. They do have influence. And I think that there's probably, I would venture to guess, depending on the district, depending on the town, you know, because there's different makeups of people. I would say it's probably like a 60-40 split, where you have 60% of the teachers who will sit there and just kind of go along to get along. And
retire as soon as they can.
And exactly. And then you have, you know, that 40% that are really the ones that like embrace and really agree with everything. The majority don't, but they're silent because they need to keep their job.
Because
they're
look what
silent.
To you. As soon as you speak up, you are fired before you even started the job.
Yeah,
in the
pretty
part
much.
That gets me the best is they're supposed to be educators, but they don't even realize that when they fired you for what you said, that's a violation of your First Amendment. So how do we get in the schools? What do we do as moms, as conservative moms, to get kids to understand where they came from, the Constitution, and what it means, and how important it is not to give up those rights? I don't understand, how do we get that across when we're kind of fighting this tide of the schools and the social media and in any news station, even Disney?
I know. Look, I think the biggest issue for us is most of the parents just don't realize what's going on, because you want to trust your school, just like you trust your doctor, right? Just like you trust when you go to the doctors, you know, yeah, you might get a second opinion, but look, let's face it.
You and I know about doctors.
Yeah, right? You know, you might get a second or third opinion, but, you know, they all read from the same book. They all have the same, you know. The thing is we want to have, for one, I think part of it is that we want to trust that the schools and the teachers and the administrators want to do right by our kids. But the second part of it is people don't have time. I mean, I work 2+ jobs. You know, my husband works 2+ jobs. Now my kids are older, you know, but even my kids, they're working 2+ jobs. Because of finances, the majority of where our kids are getting our education from is from the teachers in the schools.
But look at this too. We all have a $1,200 phone.
Yep.
People are driving brand new cars.
Yep.
Everybody has to have cable.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, I'm not saying that it was better when there was, you know, a man who worked and a woman who stayed home, because she could be drinking and doing pills just the same as anybody else.
I agree. Yeah.
But I'm just saying that I think, I don't know if it was material greed or financial need where both parents entered the workforce. And I'm not saying that women shouldn't work.
Yeah.
I'm just making an observation that when both parents work, it's, you know, when the kid, until the kids get into high school,
mm-hmm.
it's very difficult to make sure that, especially with social media, that you sit down and you have dinner, like you check in and what's going on. You know, I joke with my kids. I'm like, "You're not sending naked pictures of yourself to anybody, are you?" "Nope." "Is anybody sending naked pictures to you?" "Nope."
"Yeah."
"Anybody?"
Yeah.
I mean, I go through the interrogation because I'm petrified.
Yeah. Well, you should be. I mean, the majority of parents just, you know, they just don't realize that it's happening. They want to have I mean, things just go so fast. You know, time goes by so fast. In a blink of an eye, your kids are mini adults, you know?
Well, it's kind of like what you said before. Like, there's an epiphany that goes off every once in a while, kind of like when you decided to run for office. Right? Was it what you thought it was going to be?
Oh, absolutely not. I think, you know, I'm definitely running again. I'm definitely running again because we need people who want things to be better for everybody.
We want them to be fair. No, I don't want to even say fair because life's not fair.
Nope.
But the Constitution applies to everyone equally.
Everyone, exactly.
And you don't get more rights because you're gay or you're not gay or you're transgender or you're not transgender. And everybody should be under the red, white, and blue, but everybody seems to be flying their own flag.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's not. You find that it's divisive. There's backstabbing. There's a lot of self-serving. But then I found that people that weren't my family donated an awful lot of time to me.
Yep.
You know, you're very lucky. I noticed that your family was very involved. And, you know, they weren't supportive, but the people that volunteer for you kind of mean everything because you know how hard it is once you get into it. And they know, the volunteers know, because they've been doing it for a while.
They've been doing it. You're absolutely right. I mean, there's a lot of people that were very, very supportive. And my family was very supportive. But it's funny because at first, you know, a lot of my family just thought it was kind of a joke. They're like, what? You're running for state senate? Oh, come on, Carrie. Come on. Just go go get a job.
One of my sisters said to me, I would support you, but I don't even know what a senator does.
I'm like,
oh my gosh.
That's a you problem, right? you know, it's interesting because I think that there are a lot of crappy politicians, whether they're Republican or Democrat or in between, that are just self-serving and they just do the job because they wanted that cool job. There's not that many people that go into politics to do their part, to contribute, you know, and that's how our founding fathers set it up. Short terms. You go in, you do your part. Yeah. You go in, you do your part, and then you go. Exactly.
Yeah. So you look at, you know, you look at Charlie Baker, Tim Whalen, the unwritten rule leader on the Cape, he got appointed to the Mass DOT director. Sean Dooley, who wants to be chairman of the Republican Party, resigned his state representative to go work at a civil service job where he's appointed by Charlie Baker. So if you're not talented enough in my eyes to get a job on your own, and you're depending on politics, you're just an extortionist. You're an extortion victim, basically.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, what?
Look, I'll let you keep your job if you do what I say.
That's what happens. Like, you know, this guy that gave me a job, you know, when everything was going crazy, Michael Frazier. He, you know, he's a tough guy, but I'll tell you.
I know, Mike.
You know, he said to me, he goes, look, if you get in, Carrie, don't you dare. Let them destroy you. Don't you dare.
And I hope you told him, don't you tell me what to do.
Well, I told him quite a few things. But you know what? He's right. I think that there are some people that go into it for the right reason. And then they get a taste of the poison and they're done.
Well, you know what? I think they go looking to be accepted again.
Yeah, okay. That's true too.
You can do your job and do your job correctly and just do it intrinsically because it's the right thing to do.
Yep.
And someone wrote on, I think it was on LinkedIn the other day, is that, you know, if you're a boss, expect to be criticized and disagreed with and talked about. That's life.
Mm-hmm.
You are not going to be everybody's friend. You are not going to be everybody's cup of tea. But what I want Republicans to take the takeaway message is, you might not agree with me on 9 out of 10 things, but you're going to disagree 10 out of 10 things with a Democrat.
Yeah. And so, don't sit there and complain about how it's so hard to do your job when you're not actively recruiting. I mean, like, look, I'm running again in 2024. I've already been talking and saying, all right, who's running against Dill Pickles down there, Fernandes, right? Like, I've been, you know, telling
I've
people.
I've been doing this exact same thing. And I think, thank you, but you let the cat out of the bag that I'm going to run for state committee, Cape and Islands.
Yeah, and it's important. And I'm running on the South Shore too. So,
and I just think we need. I want moms. I want women. I want anyone who ever thought that they cared even a tiniest little bit of the freedoms that they enjoy. And that means buying the cucumbers you want to buy.
That's not right.
You know, you go down the aisle, like, these are Italian cucumbers. These are Portuguese cucumbers. These are African cucumbers. It's a cucumber. Just yeah. Care, you know, just sell me the cucumber.
Yeah. Seeded or seedless. That's all I need for choices.
seedless. Mini ones. That's what my kids like.
Yeah.
But, you know, how do we get people? I mean, I think people are paying attention to some degree, but I just don't know how we, in a blue state, you know, like I remember telling one woman when I was at her house, I go, listen, Julian Sears, he wants to legalize prostitution and all drugs. He voted to fail to suspend the gas tax. She goes, I can't believe you would say some about someone like that who served so honorably. I'm like, what planet are you on? I wish I had, you know, it written down to show her. But
yeah,
people are making up things. Like my sister says, in my heart, I see illegal aliens leaving a country that's war-torn and desolate, and they have no money and they're starving. I go, yet they come here with braces and tattoos and $1,200 phones. I don't know.
Yeah.
What intelligent person that has braces in well, maybe $500 worth of tattoos, but that's in her mind.
Yep. And look, there are some people that come here, and that's, and we need to have room for those people. But if we're just letting everybody pour in here, and then we start the investigative process, well, they're already here, and there's no getting them out of here. Then, you know, we're just letting everybody in, and there's no resources for the citizens, and there's no resources for the people that really are trying to escape.
That's what bothers
bad
me the
stuff
most.
Too. Yeah, veterans.
You know,
look at
in
that.
Portland, they're living in tents, and they're given, you know, 3 meals a day in a tent, and they can bring their own drugs to do. And that's you know, you have that down on Mass and Cass in Boston.
Yeah,
you know, it's the same sort of thing. And all Democrats want to do is move it around the corner so no one sees it.
That's right.
You know, I ran on a platform of trying to reform the drug addiction treatments in the Cape. And, you know, not a well-known name or whatever. And I would love to run again. I really looked forward to debating, you know, Julian Sear.
Yeah.
But, of course, he made it all about him being a gay man. And we know that that's not true. And you know Jeffrey Sosa-Paquette.
Yeah.
Speaking of gay men, handsome.
Yeah.
Married with a couple of kids. He's going to be on our show.
Yeah.
And we only have 1 minute left. And I'm sorry I can't ask you. Will you come back as a guest co-host again? Because I know that Diane's busy with politics in New Hampshire and it's budget season for her.
Yeah.
But I would love to have you back. And we're going to have on Dawn Bolduc. And
that's awesome.
I'm really looking forward. And I know that you did
yeah, like a panel discussion.
Discussion, yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, it was great.
So we're running up against it.
Okay.
It's 9:59, but I just wanted to say thank you so much, Carrie. And I hope that you'll come back and join us again. And
absolutely.
I want to say hello to all. Thank you to our producer, Rick Robinson. And I want to say hello to @TruckU2, Mike on Twitter, and everybody who follows us on the chat. And I want to say hi to everyone and thank you to everyone at klrnradio.com, Stacy, Rick, Ordy, and anybody that I forgot. So
thank you very much.
Carrie.
Thank
Hope
you.
We'll be back again.
Absolutely.
And we look forward to 2024.
Oh, yes.